It is Thursday. That means it's time for our thought leader conversation this morning. And we are happy to have Greg Worsak with us. He's the Senior Vice President, Senior Manager, Regional Manager of Commercial Real Estate in the Chicago market. We'll talk a little bit about the suburban real estate market. It has been hopping lately. But first, let's welcome in Greg. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
Let's talk about the suburban commercial real estate market. We've seen a couple of different reports that say it's still cooking along. We don't hear much about it, though.
No, it's downtown gets all the press and the attention for sure. In the suburbs, it's been kind of quiet, and I think everybody just assumes that they're the stepchild that all the corporations are moving from the suburbs to downtown. But the reality is there's quite a bit of opportunity in the suburbs. The challenge is just trying to find it, and it's a little tougher market to develop area to develop in. For our clients, our developer clients, it's also harder for us as lenders to lend into because it's harder to underwrite. It's a series of submarkets that you really need to dive into and understand what's driving the demand and, for each asset class, be it retail, office, and residential.
A couple things. Is there a direction that it's better in terms of is it east, west, south, or is all of the suburbs seeing this steady growth?
I don't see any particular trend. The one trend for sure that I see is access to rail. So if you go into any of the existing suburban downtown areas, there tends to be a desire to be walking distance still to the train. And that drives a lot of factors. One, it's young professionals. Usually one of the two couples will work downtown. One is in the suburbs. But one of the big things that we're seeing are the empty nesters that when they don't downsize into another for sale product. They're renting. They're taking their money off the table from the home sale, and they're just renting so they have flexibility, similar to the millennials.
Mm-hmm. And is it retail space that's going or office space or all of the above, or is there a trend there?
It seems to be all the above, and they all have different risk factors. In the residential piece, that to me has been a little bit easier and been a little bit more successful because a lot of these communities in our suburban Chicagoland area really have not seen much new construction for sale or apartment in many years. So the good news is that when your project comes to market, there's a lot of pent-up demand. Mm-hmm. The tough thing is underwriting it because there is no other product out there. It's just the older product that you have to look at and say, does this make sense? Intuitively, in a lot of areas like Oak Park, Lake Forest, Downers Grove, there's a lot of new development going on where there's transit, the train line right there.
You mentioned the amenity, the being close to the train. Are they also looking for other amenities too? And are they the standard amenities that we think of, like having a big boardroom or having a fitness center nearby or something like that, or is it something different?
It's interesting. The bigger buildings tend to have more amenities because you have more units to support it. But some of the smaller buildings, we're seeing fewer amenities or scaled back. A lot of in the condos, people don't want the big assessment. That's what we're seeing. There seems to be that trend. They prefer to go out and go to their health club or use other locations for whatever those needs might be. But for apartments, generally the bigger ones, as the units get smaller in the apartments, people are spending more time in the common areas and the amenity space. So you're seeing a larger investment in those, the pools, the decks, the indoor golfing, there's meeting spaces, just areas that are more communal.
I often see it written that people describing this as sort of organic growth. Of this area, what does organic mean in this context? Do you even like that term at all?
I don't really like that term. I'm not sure what that means exactly. Yeah, I hear that word. To me, a lot of the development in the suburbs and downtown is more infill. It's repurposing buildings. It's backfilling and, in many cases, scraping or tearing down existing buildings and doing something new. Things have changed. Mm-hmm. Is that organic? That doesn't feel organic to me, but
yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the owners of these properties out there. Are they marketing these properties the right way to get them off the market? What advice would you have for them in this area?
Well, like I said, when you're marketing, at least for the residential, like we were talking about, you know, you're trying to reach a lot of different age groups. What's driving a lot of the residential in the suburban areas and the deals that we're involved in, you've got a lot of the empty nesters. They don't use social media. They're trying to catch up. We see a lot of divorced individuals in these rental units as well, trying to stay in the school district. You know, that might be your 40s and 50s. And then we're seeing the young professionals, which are really the, you know, people in their 20s and 30s. So you have to pick a lot of different ways to penetrate those different markets.
Yeah, since you were here last, and switching to the downtown part of this story, since you were here last, I think I've seen two different projects announced with more than 1,000 units in each of these buildings that are planned. Are we getting to a point where it's almost near saturation?
That's a tough question. Your crystal ball is as good as mine, mm-hmm. but it seems like a lot, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, when you hear it announced, but some of these projects get announced. Sometimes the timing, you know, these projects are staged in. Again, it gets down to submarket to submarket. Since I was here last, I think some of those projects that have been announced are, you know, in the West Loop. A lot of those units are chasing what's occurring in the West Loop, all the new office development that's going there. Obviously, the expectation is that there needs to be places for these people to live in there. They're going to want the quality of life, walk to work, walk to retail and the restaurants and the nightlife that's already over there.
One of the other areas that's, I don't know if you would include this in the West Loop, but the North Branch redevelopment that's happening along the North Branch of the Chicago River. They've laid out the plans for this area. That's there's a little bit of empty area there. There's the old Finkel and Sons area, too. Is that one of the ones that's on your radar?
Definitely. I'm pretty bullish on the downtown market. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been tracking and financing a lot of projects in the West Loop, and then it sort of jumped over into the, you know, jumped over the freeway into the Fulton Market District. And, you know, Sterling Bay has created a whole new submarket over there of office, retail, and residential opportunities. And, you know, if you look at a map and you just start sort of following where this is all progressing and you kind of make your way up the river, it again started from the West Loop, and you've got the new office developments, you know, One North Riverside and the Heinz Building, and then you got Wolf Point that's being developed. You keep moving yourself up the river there, and you got, you know, the Tribune sites that are 30 acres south of Chicago and then another 7 acres north of Chicago. Those are right on the river. Those are prime redevelopment opportunities. You keep moving further up the river, and you hit Goose Island. The south end of the island right there is a Greyhound station that is prime for development. Keep moving further north of Goose Island, and you get up to the Finkel site. There's a large Chicago maintenance lot up there and facility that the city is just now putting on the market. So you kind of look at that new corridor, and I think that's going to be the next new hot one.
Yeah, and so what are you, if you had to use again that crystal ball, what would be the things that would go best in those areas? Because you're really going to have a clean slate to draft just about anything, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the idea is, you know, for years and years, I think the city had been reluctant to change the zoning there. It was a planned manufacturing district, and they really wanted to retain the jobs in that area. Goose Island historically has been a big manufacturing area with a lot of jobs, but the reality is most of those companies have moved out. Those jobs aren't coming back, and I think now the city is on board with changing that zoning, allowing some redevelopment to occur that makes more sense for that area at this time and place. And my guess, and I think the expectation, is that you're going to see a lot of mixed use. It's going to be office, residential, and retail, because everybody, they want the live-work solution right there. So you can, you know, office, what are they looking for? They want, where's the workforce coming from? where's the retail to support that?
Yeah, and this sort of piggybacks, I guess, maybe the only word I can use to describe it. You have the loop area that seems to be getting filled with people. People love that.
Yep.
These are those little outlying areas that people are pushing it, being pushed out to.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like a tube of toothpaste. I talked to my guys about, where's the next new hot spot? And you kind of look at that map and you say, there's really nothing left. To the east of all this is all built, developed. And to the west, it really is as well. And, where else is there to go?
Yeah, the mayor was recently out bragging again that there's a lot of cranes in the air. It's a good problem to have, isn't it?
It's a good problem to have, but, you're cautiously optimistic that this is all going to be absorbed. I mean, there's a lot of hotel rooms coming online. There's a lot of condo and apartment, not condo, residential. There's apartments coming online. I would say there's still opportunity for condo. Anything for sale that we're involved in is selling very, very quickly in and around the city.
I'd like to go back to something you said about how these things are being marketed. Social media, nearly 90% of those who are out marketing these properties are using social media. That's a pretty big number.
Yeah, it's an amazing change. I mean, and it came up pretty quickly. I mean, we weren't surprised when we saw a lot of our developer clients that are involved in hospitality and apartments using social media. But now we're starting to see it in the retail space, office. It really seems to be getting into all the asset classes.
Is it that they're using one over the other? So what do you see, like a Facebook ad, or do you see a Twitter post about the property that's up for sale, or how are they using it?
I think from what I'm seeing, a lot of our clients are employing people that are using every avenue. They're not pick one. They're using, even us, the bank, uses probably 6 social media avenues at least. And I think a lot of our clients are doing the same, and it doesn't cost a lot. Once you've created the content, it's not that hard to put it out on as many social media channels as possible.
Yeah, I remember when this was sort of experimental, and now this recent survey says almost more than half of the people using it say it's extremely important to them doing their work and getting these properties sold.
Absolutely.
So if you had to look forward to the next couple of months, what's on the radar? What it might pop up in our news feed here?
I think you're going to see an acceleration of announcements, as you alluded to, with this change that the North Branch redevelopment plan that was announced last month. I think now that is in draft form and working its way through approval, I think you're going to see an acceleration of acquisitions and announcement of new projects running up the North Branch there.
Yeah, so we'll get to see some specifics about what might be going there.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot on the drawing board.
Certainly an exciting time. Stay tuned, everybody.
Thanks, Steve.
Greg, see you again next time.
Sounds good.
Greg Warsick is Senior Vice President and Senior Regional Manager of Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank in the Chicago market. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. Remember, you can hear past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page, and every Thursday here on the program. You can also follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Thanks for being back with us here on our Thursday edition of the opening bell, 542. Now, Jennifer Jolly is the Wired Well columnist for the New York Times, a Tech Life columnist and Tech Now columnist for USA Today. She's with us today here in the studio to talk a little bit about the summer's best tech and gadgets. And we're very excited to have you in this morning. Jennifer, welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you for having me.
This is so cool to have you here because you're a tech geek and sort of a gadget geek like me. Lots to geek out about this week.
That's right. It's Apple's WWDC, their Worldwide Developers Conference, where they announced their own race for the master of the in-home speaker system, right? So, plus, they want to challenge Google's Home, mm-hmm. which works incredibly well, and the Amazon Echo and Amazon Alexa connected devices. So they want to have your best personal assistant with Siri, but also play music. And, of course, Apple Music is going to be top.
Yeah, and they chose the name HomePod. Is that the name?
HomePod.
Seems kind of a weird name, right?
You know, what that tells me is that it's their first real deep dive into the smart home. So they want that to be your home hub. But I'm disappointed. I think it's late. Siri is a distant third compared to Alexa or the Google Home device. So it's a to be seen. They really need to prove that they're still in the race and that this is the right direction for them to go.
Yeah, I saw Tim Cook talking about this, and he said that, you know, one of the reasons why the price point, that's another thing, the price point is up there in the 300s,
yeah,
is because of the speakers, that they're much better speakers than the others.
Yeah, that tends to be true with Apple. They wait. They see how everybody else does. You know, they weren't the first to come out with the iPod. Sony came out with that years and years ago, right? But they do tend to wait and be the best once they come out, or at least they used to. I'm not all that enamored with my ear pods, you know, the little earbuds.
Yeah, right.
The quality isn't there. It should be the best. I haven't gone hands-on with it, ears-on with it. There are a lot of us who are all in with the Apple ecosystem. We buy Apple products because we expect them to be better than the rest. They've been trailing off a little with that quality control. So if this isn't truly the best out there, if Siri doesn't work well, it doesn't matter how good the speakers are.
And I think you hit it right on the head when you said it feels like they're late to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of concerning, too, not only for investors. Their stock has been flat this week while all this has been going on. But for you and me and all the people who like Apple, that they shouldn't be late to that game.
No, I mean, Apple's sitting there out where I live in the Silicon Valley area. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on more money, you know, than most countries in the world. It's really noticeable for someone like me who's covered this industry for so long. They seem a little lost, and it's, you can feel it, you can see it, you can feel it in the gadgets. You know, when I spend $1,000 for a phone, that phone needs to work.
Yeah.
That phone needs to do what it says it will do. It needs to have a battery life that it says it will have. When I spend $3,000 on a laptop and then go on an airplane and the battery's dead in 2 hours, that's completely unacceptable. So that's a real pain point for Apple right now. So if you're going to be late to the game, you better have a better product than anybody else, and it better be noticeably better for consumers, because we're not just talking about early adopters and gearheads. We're talking about mainstream consumers who really want these gadgets to work and work well and work for more than a year or two.
Yeah, this is, aside from Apple, this is the big summer travel season. Let's talk a little bit about some of the tech that's out there for summer. What are you seeing that's good?
Well, I'm seeing some apps that make a ton of sense for summer travel. One is a new one, just came out of beta. It's called Dosh, D-O-S-H. And what this app does, it sounded too good to be true when I first heard the pitch, but you download it. It's free to download. You put it on your phone. You take a picture of a debit card or credit card, so that's within the app. And then you shop as you normally would with that debit or credit card. And then every little rebate, 7% at The Gap or 20% at Target, everything gets automatically credited back to that account that you're using. So it's a rebate program. You don't have to mail in for it. You don't have to wait 3 months for it. It's automatic. And they're really beefing up. They have about 100,000 merchants involved, and they've added a ton of travel. And I was in New York last week, and I was using it with Hotels Tonight, one of my other favorite apps. They were giving me better prices on hotels and car rentals than Hotels Tonight, and I was getting as much as $100 cash back from that. So that's brilliant. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Right. The other part of this, you know, it's in addition to the summer travel season, Father's Day is in June.
That's right.
I mean, when you're buying tech for dad, I mean, you have to be on your game. What are you seeing out there that would be good for him?
Well, what I got my dad this year, you know, like, not to ruin it or anything for dad, but
we won't tell.
My dad's been talking about smart home stuff for a really long time. And one of the things, he lives in an older home, you know, our house I grew up in. So we've been talking about a security system. and he doesn't want to hardwire it. So I kind of looked all over the place. I found Honeywell has a Lyric gateway system that is plug and play. So you plug it, you program it, and then you can download an app on his phone or on your phone. You can stream video, you can get alerts, all of that. And I've been kind of a fan of this Lyric T5 series for a while. You can also control your thermostat, things like that, right from the smart home hub. So I like that one for dad.
Yeah. One of the other cool things you brought in, we were playing it before we came on the air this morning, was this the picture video thing that the only way, the best way I can describe it, it looks like a Harry Potter photo.
I have been saying that it's just like what you saw in the Harry Potter movies. So it's called the Print Pocket. It's another new gadget. You just put your phone right into it. It plugs right into an iPhone 7. I think it has a couple different iPhone, you know, whatever has the Lightning connector. In fact, I know it does because it kind of expands, and so you can still use the iPhone 6. You download an app. You can print right out of your photo library from your phone. But what's really cool about it is you can embed video into those photos. So you can even print video. It'll take a still frame. You hold your little scanner over that photo, and people move, you know, things move, images move, just like in Harry Potter. It's like printing video.
And it's one of those things where it just shows you the coming VR, AR movement, how big and exciting it's going to be, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Apple at WWDC this week, there's so much talk about that artificial intelligence and AR, that kind of virtual reality, artificial reality, the layers, you know, walking around Chicago, holding your phone, an app in front of a building, and you get the entire history of that building. That kind of thing will just get bigger and bigger. And I've tested out some glasses that aren't, you know, Google Glass kind of silly looking glasses, where you can walk around and have that AR embedded in it as well. So it's really cool.
One of the other things that was exciting to talk to you about is, I know you wrote about this recently and you've been blogging about it. We saw that the FCC might allow companies to send voicemail spam to your phone. And I know you've been writing about how to block all of this from your mobile phone. This is going to be kind of a headache, isn't it, if this goes through?
It's
to all of a sudden
such...
see your phone with voicemail on it and it'd be spam without it ever ringing.
It's so painful. And I did months and months of research to try to figure out, because it started happening to me. I was, you know, I'm on all those do not call registries and everything, but I was getting, you know, upwards of 12 calls a day on my cell phone. So you can sign up for that do not call, and then the legitimate companies who care about that won't call you, but the bad ones will keep calling you, and that's who we're worried about. So the best fix that I found out there was Nomo Robo. It's an app. There's a slight amount to pay. It's been worth every penny. It's cut off all those calls to my cell phone and my home phone.
As somebody who gets to see and hold all of these gadgets and stuff in advance, when we as consumers go and buy this, what would be your advice so that we don't get roped into something bad? Because it's not like we get to try stuff out like you do.
Right.
What would be your advice to people?
Well, that is my advice, really. If you're running down to Best Buy or going into Target, go hands-on with this gadget. So many of these things, they look amazing in a commercial. You get them home and maybe they kind of work. And then what we tend to do as the people, you know, forking out all our hard-earned money for this stuff is think, oh, I must be doing something wrong. A lot of times you're not doing anything wrong. That gadget or that product isn't working as advertised. So Google it. Take a look at other folks who have gone hands-on with it. Recognize what's a commercial, what's not. You know, everything that I do on my site, everything that a lot of people that I work with, it will give you the good, the bad. We were talking about the Air Selfie drone earlier. Every tech outlet in the world's talking about this is amazing. You hold it in the palm of your hand. You toss it up in the air. It flies around. It only stays charged for 3 minutes. Nobody's talking about that.
Nope.
So we'll give you the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between, and you know, tell it to you like it is.
It's good meeting you, Jennifer. We'll be following your blog, if you get any more gadgets, bring them in. We'll love to play with them.
Absolutely. Let's try to fly that drone. We have 3 minutes, right?
Yeah, we could do that, sure. Thanks for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Jennifer Jolly is the Wired columnist, Wired Well columnist for the New York Times, Tech Life columnist, and host of Tech Now for USA Today. You can follow her on Twitter at Jennifer Jolly. We'll post some of the video of us playing with some of these gadgets. Try not to be jealous.
with the podcast of today's The Opening Bell and at WGNRadio.com.